It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Yeah, what I can tell you is that Neil Gorsuch will be confirmed this week. How that happens really depends on our Democratic friends. How many of them are willing to oppose cloture on a partisan basis to kill a Supreme Court nominee? Never happened before in history, in the whole history of the country. In fact, filibustering judges at all is a rather recent phenomenon started by your next guest, Senator Schumer, after George Bush, 43, got elected president. We didn't used to do this. Clarence Thomas was confirmed 52-48, the most controversial Supreme Court nominee in history, and not a single senator said he has to get 60 votes.
Ooh, I am here. Sandy Rios with you. That was, of course, the voice of Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader. Today, the Judiciary Committee in the Senate votes on the nomination of Neil Gorsuch. And, of course, you heard as Senator McConnell say that he's confident that Neil Gorsuch will be confirmed this Friday by the full Senate. And that's pretty amazing when you consider the controversy and also when you understand the process in Washington, which is that if Democrats object to it, and the Senate, of course, is only controlled by the Republicans by just a few votes, and at this point, only three Democrats have decided that they will support Neil Gorsuch, at least only three so far, and that's because of where they come from. Their states went for Donald Trump overwhelmingly. Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, and Joe Donnelly of Indiana. You know, they would not be doing this. They would not be supporting Gorsuch if they weren't worried about their own elections in their states. Isn't that something? Wouldn't you like to? It's kind of a interesting tension, isn't it? You want the people that you elect to do what you want them to do, but you also want them to be people of principle who have more knowledge than you have and actually do represent your interests and come home and explain to you, try to teach you if you as a voting public what they perceive is the wrong view on something, you'd like to think you could trust them and they could say, no, listen, there's more to it than this. But it doesn't work that way. They're always covering their backs. And so, but I'm glad, you know, Joe Donnelly, Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp, all of them supporting Neil Gorsuch. And of course, as I said, the committee will vote on it today. He won't have any trouble getting out of the Judiciary Committee because it's a Republican majority. So that's going to happen. And then the entire Senate will vote on Friday. What they're trying to say, of course, is these are Senate rules that you hear, you know, the nuclear option, you hear the filibuster, all of these things are hard because you shouldn't have to know these things. And yet it is the way the Senate operates. If one senator opposes some issue, it could be anything, then they can invoke a rule which would require 60 votes from the Senate in order to vote on that, whether it's a nominee or an issue. And so it's called the cloture vote. So we vote to vote. And so a lot of times you'll get 60 votes on cloture, but then the bill will not pass because senators want there to be a vote, but when it comes to the actual decision on the actual measure or person, they vote no. I know, see, it's confusing, but that's really what's going to be talked about this week, just so you know. And so as Mitch McConnell was explaining, and Laura Ingraham did a hit on Fox News Sunday, also explaining the same thing, even Clarence Thomas, with all the controversy surrounding him, was confirmed with a vote of 52-48. Cloture wasn't used against him. This is a recent phenomena where the Democrats are digging in their heels and saying, we refuse to nominate, to let the president have his nominee. We're going to oppose it in every way that we can. We're going to make you break this Senate rule, and which I think McConnell's prepared to do. even though it seems to be bothering him because he's a creature of rules. But the Senate has to break this rule and do away with cloture in order to get the votes needed to nominate Neil Gorsuch. I think he's going to do that after listening to what he has to say over the weekend. I really do think. I had doubted it at first because, as I said, he loves process. That's part of the problem with Mitch McConnell. It's one of his strengths, but if it's one of his great weaknesses, because he's kind of wooden, and the process seems to mean more than the substance to him. That's what I've always complained. By the way, Lindsey Graham was out. He's been getting so much opposition in his town halls. I'm not sure why he keeps doing them. But, of course, the left is out in full force to try to derail and discredit and discourage and stop, you know, any of these Republicans when they go to talk to their constituents. It's not their constituents. It's the left showing up at full force with all these emails, all these efforts by Soros to get people out to disrupt and destroy. Lindsey Graham said he was going to vote for Gorsuch. He's booed and heckled. His response was, Democrats who complain about Merrick Garland, who, of course, was the nominee of the Democrats that didn't get a vote, Democrats who complain about Merrick Garland are almost like an arsonist complaining about a fire. You have to let that soak in a minute. I thought that was kind of funny. But anyway, that's what happened to Lindsey Graham. Yes, forgive my voice. Yes, I have allergies, and here I go again. So if I go silent for a minute, I'll be back, I promise. So if you can stand it, I can stand it. Over the weekend, of course, the president, it's an interesting thing that's happening. I've spent a lot of time talking about the president criticizing the Freedom Caucus, not just criticizing, but threatening to go after them. I did not tell you, I did mention this on another show on AFR, I was actually at a meeting at the White House last Wednesday, and in lots of different ways and lots of different information, not in that meeting, but as a result of that meeting, I was told that the president is not hearing all sides of the argument. Dave Brett, I think, alluded to that in an interview that he did. I was told, and this is, you know, who knows if this, I was just told by someone that you should know that Reince Priebus is actually controlling the information that gets to the president, and he has not been hearing all sides the way he needs to. And so Reince Priebus is a member of the establishment. He's firmly fixed in that, along with his dear friend Paul Ryan. And they hate conservatives, and they don't work for conservatives, and they would love to use this issue to destroy and get rid of conservatives. So a lot has been said about that. Kristen Fisher on Fox yesterday had an interesting report on what the president was doing and kind of an update because every day is different. So let's listen to what Kristen Fisher has to report.
The tweet today from President Trump would seem to indicate that he's confident that the two warring factions of the Republican Party are going to be able to come together to repeal and replace Obamacare. And to do that, he's going to need to play nice with members of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, which thwarted their first attempt. But a senior administration official took action in the opposite direction just yesterday. Dan Scavino, who is the director of social media here at the White House, he fired off a warning shot to all congressional Republicans up for re-election that if they don't get on board with the administration's agenda, then this White House is prepared to actively campaign against them in their own primaries. So here's the tweet that started it all. It reads, Real Donald Trump is bringing auto plants and jobs back to Michigan. Congressman Justin Amash is a big liability. Trump train, defeat him in the primary. Well, Congressman Amash responded by saying the Trump administration and the establishment have merged into the Trump establishment. Same old agenda, attack conservatives, libertarians, and independent thinkers. And then in a subsequent tweet, Congressman Amash said, bring it on. Well, then this morning, Congressman Jim Jordan, who is a fellow member of the House Freedom Caucus, he came to his defense on CNN State of the Union. Listen to this.
Justin Amash is a good friend and one of the most principled members of Congress. And frankly, if he is primaried, I'm going to do everything I can to help him.
Well, now Scavino is coming under fire for possibly violating the Hatch Act. A former chief chief ethics lawyer under the George W. Bush administration, says that Scavino broke the law by using his official position to try to influence the outcome of an election. Now, the White House is countering that by saying, no, he did not. And the reason he did not is because he made that tweet from his personal Twitter account and not his official White House account. But critics are clearly going to say that that's simply splitting hairs, that a tweet from a White House official is a tweet from a White House official.
Yeah, so, you know, when you see, all right, here's Dan Scavino. He's in charge of social media in the White House. And his tweet says, she read it, but I'm going to read it to you again. At Real Donald Trump is bringing auto plants and jobs back to Michigan. Justin Amash is a big liability at Trump train. Defeat him in primary. All right, now that sounds like a lot like those other tweets that came out of the Trump, came out of Trump's Twitter account, doesn't it? Like a defeat, the Freedom Party, Freedom Caucus is standing in the way. You know, we need to defeat both them and the Dems. That sounds like, doesn't that sound like that same voice? It does to me. And this is mere speculation on my part. I'm not, no one's told me, but I'm just telling you there is intra-party war going on in the Trump office. I've told you this before, because he has appointed people who are not friendly. He's appointed a lot of people to work in that space with him that are actually opposed to the things he says he wanted to do. And therein lies the problem. So here you got Dan Scavino tweeting on from his own account, attacking Justin Amash, who's part of the Freedom Caucus. So Justin Amash fires back. It didn't take long for the swamp to drain at Real Donald Trump. No shame, Mr. President. Almost everyone succumbs to the D.C. establishment. And he's right about that. You know, he is absolutely right about that. So you people in Michigan need to support your Congressman Justin Amash, Jim Jordan, these Freedom Caucus members. They are the guys holding fast, and I have a lot more to say about that. In fact, a lot of the Freedom Caucus members went out on the steps of the Capitol. Jim Jordan was the spokesperson. I want to, this is when, Thursday morning, when the president issued this Twitter, we must fight them, the Freedom Caucus, and the Dems in 2018. And I, you know what? I'm telling you, I bet you anything. It was Dan Scavino that tweeted that. The president's probably a little busy. I realize he does a Twitter, you know, tweet in the early morning, but that sounds like the same voice that said, Justin Amash is a big liability. Defeat him in the primary. Doesn't that sound like the same voice that might say, we must fight them and the Dems in 2018? I'm just saying. Just saying. Nevertheless, it's coming out of the White House, and it is one of the president's choices, Dan Scavino. So, okay, so the Freedom Caucus comes out after that. And let me just say also, to clarify, if I haven't said this to you, because I've written this, but I don't know if I said this, there were tons of moderate Republicans who pulled off the bill, over 100, Speaker of the House Ryan pulled the bill. He knew that he was going to lose about 100 members of his caucus who were not going to support the bill. The Freedom Caucus, at their strongest, is 40 people, and they didn't have 40 people opposing the bill. So it's just an absolute lie to blame the whole thing, the failure of it, on the Freedom Caucus, although I have to say, if they stopped it, God bless them. So Raul Labrador says, the Freedom Caucus stood with you when others ran. Remember who your real friends are. We're trying to help you succeed. And Thomas Massey, who is not part of the Freedom Caucus, but he's often on the same side, he said, at Real Donald Trump, it's a swamp, not a hot tub. We both came here to drain it. At Swamp Care, the polls are at 17%. Sad. So they're fighting back, and I'm glad that they are. Mark Sanford's doing the same thing. He says the idea of threatening your way to legislative success may not be the wisest of strategies. His message yesterday was that he wanted to work with Democrats. I guess the message today is we need to fight against Freedom Caucus members and Democrats. That's a conflicted message. It's a case of shooting messengers who were rightfully pointing out problems in the bill the American public has not shown proclivity toward. I have more to tell you, and maybe it's a good sign. And so just stay tuned, because I'm going to bring you a little bit of good news and a little bit more about what the Freedom Caucus is saying, because I'm on their team. I am. I tell you without a doubt, I think these guys are the heart and soul, the honest dudes, the brave ones, the warriors standing against a lot of really bad stuff and taking a beating. And that bothers me. So I probably will say a lot more about it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
NOAA and technology. This is Ken Ham, and our life-size ark is open near Cincinnati and already popular. As we built our full-size Noah's Ark, many people had questions about the original ark. One question we got a lot and still get is why we use technology to build the ark. Many people believe Noah didn't have any technology. Or did he? Actually, we don't know what kind of technology Noah had because his world was completely destroyed in the global flood. But we do know that Adam's descendants were intelligent people, made in God's image, just like us. There's no reason to believe they didn't have amazing technologies. The Bible tells us that just a few generations after Adam, people were working with bronze and iron, playing instruments and building cities. Imagine what else they could have done.
Want to learn more about Noah, the flood, and our life-size ark? You'll discover so much more on our information-packed website at AnswersRadio.com. That's AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Al Roker, the weather guesser on NBC's Today Show, is crisscrossing the country trying to break world records. The other day, he landed at the University of Oklahoma. Oh, there was a big crowd on hand, lots of college kids, including Levi Kell. Levi's a student at OU, big Donald Trump fan, so he brought along a homemade poster that read, "Trump is our president." The O and the U were drawn in bright red Sooner colors. Just after Levi entered the stadium, he was stopped by several university officials. He was told his sign was inappropriate and made the school look bad. One official gave him a choice, ditch the sign or he would have to leave. Levi chose to leave, but not before pointing out several other students had signs that said, "President Trump was a disaster." Levi says those students were allowed to stay. I reached out to the university for a comment, but they have yet to reply. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We had to do something to drive the costs down. We said people are going to be outraged if they find out costs are going to keep going up. They said, well, give Tom Price more power and he'll help bring it down. We were demanding, we got to do some things to bring down prices. People can't stand this.
Okay.
And when they see that it's here, oh, and the president agreed with us twice. And each time Priebus and Ryan say, no, you can't do that. He wanted to make a deal. He was ready to make a deal. And we were negotiating with Paul, with Kevin McCarthy, right up through Tuesday. And all of a sudden, they had a meeting and they decided, we're so close to having the number we need. Let's go to war and get the president to help us go to war against the people that defended the president when Ryan and those guys said abandon him.
Congressman, you've taken us to today. And they are vowing that this will happen. You just heard that from the vice president. You heard it from Donald Trump, yeah, the president himself, in a tweet this morning. He tweeted this: the Freedom Caucus will hurt the entire Republican agenda if they don't get on the team and fast. Yeah. He said, we must fight them and Dems in 2018. You say you saw it. What was your reaction?
I heard the same kind of thing in the Wall Street bailout. And as bad a president as McCain would have been, he had a chance if he had stood his ground. If this bill passes, the president's administration will be defined for the next 4 years as a fraud, as they promised repeal and they gave more power to the government, and it's costing us more. It is going to destroy his administration, but it's a twofer for the establishment. They destroy the conservatives, the grassroots that stood by the president, and they make the president look terrible when people actually find out how bad this hurts.
So tell me,
the American
what is it?
Individual.
All right, so that's Louie Gohmert, Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas, with Sandra Smith on Fox Business Network. And he had more to say, and so I'm going to play it because I want you to hear how he explains further what the Freedom Caucus thoughts are on this bill. Let's listen, Congressman Louie Gohmert.
What does it look like, the Freedom Caucus, working with the president moving forward? He is calling out members of the caucus by name, starting with Justin Amash. He said Justin Amash is a big liability. Hashtag Trump train, defeat him in primary. Yeah. There's sort of threats coming from the president for members of the Freedom Caucus if they don't work together. Congressman, I would ask you, tax reform is another priority for this administration. What does it look like working with...
It's a priority for all of us.
What does it look like?
It will be a disastrous tax bill if he weakens the conservatives that would make it a good bill. So he's taken advice from Priebus, who is establishment to the core, and if it keeps up, he is going to get hurt the way establishment people actually hurt Reagan. The only time Reagan succeeded was when he didn't listen to the establishment folks like Priebus is today and actually followed his own instinct. But I'm telling you, the president's administration will either succeed or fail over the next 30 days. He can work with the people that got him there, that defended him when others like Ryan and the establishment were running scared, or he can work with us to help him fulfill his promises. But this bill doesn't satisfy any of the promises that we made. It's going to be bad. Really going to be a disaster.
All right, so that was Congressman Louie Gohmert. Now, here's the thing about the couple of points. I told you when we talked about this probably the first of last week that when people were declaring this the end of the world, that healthcare, Trump failed. This is his signature promise, and he failed. He's a failure, and et cetera. And you heard that from Charles Krauthammer and others. And I kept saying, no, look, that's just the first shot. That's the first try. I mean, this is the way legislation works. And they didn't even bring it up for a vote. And the way that Paul Ryan introduced it, and I've said it enough, they did not invite anyone to make suggestions. They delivered a bill and were trying to force their members of their caucus to accept this bill. They hardly knew what was in it. And the Freedom Caucus had a lot of objections because it's a socialistic plan. And I've said that enough. It's expensive. It will not solve the problem. And we have a serious problem. I talked to a woman yesterday who talked about the terrible care her husband just got in the hospital. She was talking about the room was dirty. She said he was there for a week and they didn't even change his sheets. The problem is that our healthcare system is breaking down. She said that she'd had three doctors leave the profession, three of her own personal doctors just in recent months. And so we have a problem. It needs to be fixed, but it needs to really be fixed the right way. Newt Gingrich was also on. He was on with Sean Hannity, and I wanted you to hear what Newt had to say. Newt is just a brilliant guy. Sometimes he says some things that I think he says a lot of great things, and I think this is one of them. So let's listen, Newt Gingrich.
Look, first of all, you hit it right in the head. The Freedom Caucus had probably the highest percentage of Trump supporters of any group in the House. They disagree about this one thing, and I think from their perspective, they probably think Trump was misinformed. Let me give you an example of something today that Nancy Pelosi doesn't get. The National Association of Manufacturers met with the president to share with him that their CEOs have the highest level of confidence in making new investments in the United States that they can remember in well over a decade. This follows other things that are going on. Despite all the noise in Congress, President Trump is making real progress, and he's getting things done. And every time you turn around, you see new signs of investment, new commitments to build things in the United States. I think that he's got to solve this legislative problem. My personal advice would be to start with infrastructure, and frankly, after the extraordinary fire in Atlanta last night, which is going to cause enormous traffic problems. I mean, this is a good reminder that we got to rebuild our infrastructure. I think you start there, then you move to a tax cut bill, not just tax reform, and then you get to health care third. But right now, I think they're all gridlocked and too busy being mad at each other. They got to get over it, relax. This is the beginning of a long game. This is not the end of it. And we got lots of time to get lots of good things done for America.
Yes, and I think that that is the point. Really, if I stop to make a point, it would be that President Trump, in spite of the obstacles, which are incredible, as in spite of the missteps, in spite of having what I consider really bad counseling around him, is doing some really wonderful things. There are jobs coming back. The EPA rules, Obama's rules, draconian rules being absolutely abolished last week is a gift to all of us in terms of our energy future. We saw, you know, them drop the Department of Education's forcing school districts around the country to open their bathrooms to all genders and the dressing facilities. That was done. There are a lot of really asking all of the department heads to go through with a fine-tooth comb their regulations and rules and find out ways that we can just do away with those, ways that we can reduce the percentage of people, cut these departments by huge percentages and save money, and on we could go, the things that he's actually been doing that have been very effective. And I also just, this is interesting to me, Ambassador Nikki Haley at the UN reported something really interesting to me. She said, she was talking about Russia, and she said that there was no question Russia meddled in the election. Now, don't confuse that to mean that Russia interfered in order to help Donald Trump. That's not the same thing. Meddled doesn't mean that they came in and co-opted, and I'm going to get into that in just a second. But this is what else she said that I want to repeat to you. She said, there's no love or anything going on with Russia right now. They get that we're getting our strength back, that we're getting our voice back, and that we're starting to lead again. And honestly, at the United Nations, that's the number one comment I get, is that they're just so happy to see the United States lead again. So that's something else that is happening only because of President Donald Trump. And I would also say that a report from, I'm sure you saw it, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but the president in down in Florida, where he seems to do his business over the weekend on the golf course, invited Rand Paul and Mick Mulvaney to come and play golf with him. Now, Rand has been with the Freedom Caucus on opposing. He's been one of the most vocal opponents in telling the Freedom Caucus to stick to their guns. And so, of course, Rand is a doctor, in case you've forgotten that part. So the president played golf with him yesterday and was then now tweeting things more optimistically. He says, he said, the talks on replacing the law have been going on. We will continue until such a time as a deal is hopefully struck. And he said, anyone that thinks the effort is dead does not know and the love and strength of the Republican Party. All right, so that's a departure. And so that's a good thing. It gives us reason to be optimistic. And I'm glad they're continuing to work on it. I'm glad it's okay to fight. It's okay. I always think, you know, when our representatives don't get mad and they don't fight each other, they don't really care. I get more concerned when they say, the gentleman from such and such, and it's a terrible thing. You know, something horrible has just happened. Some usually Democratic operative has done something that's completely, has said something outrageous, like whether it's, Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi, and someone will respond, well, that wasn't prudent that they said that. And I think, you know, get angry. It's a time to get angry because there are outrageous things happening and the times are dangerous. And by the way, that reminds me, a friend of mine who's a warfare expert sent a really fascinating video of a Russian operative talking about he's evidently come over to our side. This is not a new video, but he's interviewed and he describes the plan to the worldwide communist effort take over the globe, and he talks about the effort in the United States. He talks about it being a four-stage process, and I'm going to play that for you. I'm going to play that for you at length when we get a chance here. I'm not sure what day, but we're going to do that because I want you to understand that this is a very big battle. And the things that we're fighting, you know, all serve a purpose for a larger, more wicked end, really. And so we need to be vigilant. I'll play that for you. The thing that he's very smug and very very cocky about how things are proceeding way, you know, way further along than they had anticipated, what success they're having in colleges and universities. It's an amazing piece of audio, and I will share that with you. But the thing that I would say even before you hear it, he does not understand who God is. He does not understand that God does dwell in the affairs of men, as Benjamin Franklin said, and he does not understand that no matter how wise, wickedly wise, and smart, and crafty the worldwide communist movement and the people that participate in it are, they will never outsmart God, and he will prevail. He will prevail. But I'm going to play this for you because in the interim, we have to put up with this stuff, don't we? All right, I want to change the subject ever so slightly, but this is probably as important to me to communicate to you as anything today. Kevin Cork appeared on the White House lawn yesterday and gave a report about Devin Nunes, who's the head of the House Intelligence Committee, and I have a lot to say about it, so let's listen.
Chris, as is usually the case in Washington scandals, it's the cover-up and not the crime that usually ensnares, and there are legitimate questions about that with respect to the ongoing controversy over what House Intelligence Committee Chair Devin Nunes knew about possible surveillance of Trump aides and how he came about getting that information. Nunes, you may recall, claimed to have such compelling information he needed to rush to the White House and tell the president himself. But he did that without sharing what he found with fellow members of the Intelligence Committee, which is highly unusual. This, as Fox News has confirmed, that Nunes received key information from a pair of White House aides, calling into question not only his relationship with the administration, but his ability to be impartial as this investigation unfolds. Concerns further complicated by his decision to delay former acting Attorney General Sally Yates from testifying about possible links between Russia and the Trump campaign, hearings that would have included former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and former CIA Director John Brennan. A Washington Post report you may have heard about suggested the Trump administration was behind that delay, something the White House strongly denies.
I hope she testifies. I look forward to it. It was never, let's be honest, the hearing was never, was actually never notified. If they choose to move forward, great. We have no problem with her testifying, plain and simple. The report in the Washington Post is 100% false.
Chris, Speaker Paul Ryan said that Nunes told him his source has whistleblower type information. We'll see what that means. We don't know at this point, but what we certainly know is that Mike Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, had his rights violated in this saga. We'll see if he's able to testify with immunity. As time will tell, we'll see how that all turns out.
Well, it sounds to me like Kevin Cork is getting his information from John Roberts, and I think I've made it abundantly clear to you that I think John Roberts is on the other team on this one, because there's nothing wrong with Devin Nunes, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, going over to the White House to read confidential information or classified information that he cannot read anywhere else. You have to understand that the servers don't share information. This classified stuff cannot be, you know, emailed to the House. It can't happen that way. And I want to read Victor David Hansen, who is not, I have never had him on this show, and we've got to because he's brilliant. He says the central question remains, who leaked what classified information for what reasons? And second, since when is it improper or even unwise for an apprehensive intelligence official, meaning Devin Nunes, to bring information of some importance to the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee for external review in a climate of endemic distrust of an intelligence agency? Nunes also said that the surveillance shown him it was essentially a lot of information on the president-elect and his transition team and what they were doing, and further suggested that the surveillance may have involved high-level Obama officials, maybe even the president, as in Obama himself. And so Victor points out that it's not, why would he just go ahead and run to Adam Schiff? And I'm going to talk about Adam Schiff in just a second to explain why he might not have done that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. There's a fundamental problem in our nation when lawbreakers are protected at the expense of citizens. That was hammered home recently when two illegal immigrants brutally attacked a 14-year-old girl in a Rockville, Maryland school. The 18-year-old suspect had been stopped at the border, but under Obama's policies was still allowed to enter the U.S. Not only have liberal politicians turned a blind eye to the problems brought by illegal immigration, but just days after this horrific attack, the Maryland legislature voted in favor of making Maryland a sanctuary state, pledging to protect illegal aliens from deportation at the expense of their own constituents. What will be the ultimate price as lawlessness breeds greater lawlessness? It's not just jobs and national security that are being sacrificed on the altar of liberal ideology. It's our very children. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
To sharpen the faith of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those who don't know Him. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. This is host David Wheaton inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, to pursue that mission as we discuss a compelling topic from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on AFR Talk.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump will do something today that his predecessor refused to do. He will meet with the elected leader of Egypt, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. President Obama made no secret of his enmity for his Egyptian counterpart. After all, as his country's senior military officer in 2013, then General el-Sisi fulfilled the demands of many millions of Egyptians by ending the misrule of the Muslim Brotherhood government, a regime Mr. Obama helped bring to power. The brothers were banished in part because they sought to impose their totalitarian Sharia code on Egypt, a goal they seek worldwide. President Obama embraced the Muslim Brothers. Donald Trump came to office rejecting their agenda and the radical Islamic terrorism it spawns. President Trump can prove the vital U.S.-Egyptian alliance is restored by joining President el-Sisi in designating the Muslim Brotherhood what it is, a terrorist organization. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I went to comment on what Frank just said. Today, President el-Sisi from Egypt is visiting with Donald Trump here in the United States. Remember that Egypt was torn apart by the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, people were killed and Christians were certainly targeted by el-Sisi. It was a nightmare experience. And Egypt, you know, Patrick Poole, who has been on this show many times, was in Egypt shortly after that, and the Egyptians ask him point blank, why in the world would the United States continue to cooperate with and work with the Muslim Brotherhood, which is what we do as a nation? They are in the highest levels of our government. Some of them represent us in Congress. They form the Council for American Islamic Relations. They do the PR And they jump in after every terrorist attack and say, oh, it's a, they accuse people of Islamophobia if they dare say that Islam had anything to do with these terrorist attacks, or if there's something wrong with Sharia law. You know, they are in the business of civilization jihad. And so Donald Trump has indicated that he would declare them a terrorist group, and now he's trying. Now let me just tell you what's happening. McMaster and others are trying to talk him out of this. Mattis, Bulldog Mattis, the general that he bragged so much on, is terrible on this issue. And they claim that the Muslim Brotherhood is just, you know, a secular organization that's largely nonviolent. It's just only a small wing that's been hijacked by extremists. And that's just not true. And if you have any doubts about it, we should post yet once again. Let's do that. That little booklet, Civilization Jihad, which is the Muslim Brotherhood Nerve Center instructions. It lists every organization linked to them, including the Muslim Students Association, Islamic State of North America, Society of North America, on and on it goes, and laying out how they plan to destroy us from within. So just so you know, if this is an issue that I'm going to try it when I get off the air. I never mentioned Twitter to you guys. I should, but I am at Sandy Rios Tweet is my Twitter account. And I put a lot of things on Twitter that I can't often put on our Facebook page. And this would be a big help if you guys tweet to retweet. We're going to encourage this president to continue with his campaign promise to declare the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. They must. He must. It is. And we've got to shut down the influence of those inside the White House who he has appointed who don't see it that way, who are so sadly and dangerously mistaken about this. All right, but back to the whole business about Devin Nunes. Evelyn Farkas was in the State Department. She worked for Hillary Clinton. I think she was deputy secretary, undersecretary, some such designation. She is now at MSNBC. But when the leaks, when the inside information from Trump, the Trump campaign and his people that were part of it, we've yet to learn the details of this. When this was happening at the end of the Obama administration, Evelyn was not part of the administration. She was gone. So was Hillary Clinton. And yet we know now that they both had access to top secret information, Hillary Clinton and Evelyn Farkas. Evelyn admits this on an interview with MSNBC, which you probably heard, but I haven't played it. So let's listen.
I was urging my former colleagues and frankly speaking, the people on the Hill. Mm-hmm. It was more actually aimed at telling the Hill people, get as much information as you can, get as much intelligence as you can before President Obama leaves the administration, because I had a fear that somehow that information would disappear with the senior people who left. So it would be hidden away in the bureaucracy, that the Trump folks, if they found out how we knew what we knew about the Trump staff's dealing with Russians, that they would try to compromise those sources and methods, meaning we would no longer have access to that intelligence. So I became very worried because not enough was coming out into the open, and I knew that there was more. We have very good intelligence on Russia. So then I had talked to some of my former colleagues, and I knew that they were trying to also help get information to the Hill.
Yeah, so they were leaking like a sieve. They were exposing Americans and alleging that there was something untoward. Do I have to remind anyone that Russia, since the fall of the Soviet Union, we have done business with them? There was a flood of Americans that went. I was one of them who went to Russia after the Soviet Union broke up. I actually went before they broke up, and the Union itself broke up like 6 months later. But there was a flood of Americans, a flood of American businessmen. They became an ally of sorts. Now, that does not mean that they are trustworthy. Does not mean that Vladimir Putin is a great guy and he's done wonderful things. I'm not saying that. We have allies of all kinds of stripes that don't have very good records on human rights and other things. And I think the Russians are not trustworthy because of their communist past. They are bent toward lying and manipulation and mind games. And so I'm not saying that, but I am saying it's not a crime to have had some connection to the Russians. I want to read to you. Okay, I want to tell you this. Adam Schiff, who is Devin Nunes' counterpart, who's been fussing and huffing and puffing about how could Devin Nunes go over and read this stuff at the White House and take it to the president before he took it to him, and you know, insinuating that Devin Nunes is, you know, trying to help the Trump administration. It's purely partisan, has nothing to do with his concern that a former president may have surveilled a candidate of the opposing party, which is illegal, dangerous to turn the abilities of the American intelligence community on Americans' private citizens, and not just Donald Trump, but other members of his campaign, to try to destroy them. That's kind of a big deal. I've been telling you that. So the president actually called his bluff. The White House invited Adam Schiff to come over and view this information. And the problem is, of course, that's not exactly what Adam Schiff wanted. He does better when he insinuates and huffs and puffs when he actually knows what's in there, which he probably already has a good idea, because he is like the chief cover-up guy for the Obama administration. He was. Then it's a little harder to defend, because then he can see what Devin Nunes saw. So he came out basically saying that there was no evidence that there was any link between Russia and the Trump campaign. Isn't that inconvenient? That's so inconvenient. And so it's a little harder for him. You have to understand, Devin Nunes is a great liar. He looks very convincing, doesn't he? Except that when we saw him in the Benghazi hearings, he was the point man on not letting so many people who were affected by that raid, by that horrible handling, and that resulted in the death of four Americans. It was Devin Nunes who buried evidence and refused to let people testify. He was a complete obstructionist all the way along, trying to protect Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration. He is not a trustworthy source. But then that brings me to this article, which I wish I had time to read the whole thing. I don't, but I'm going to give you a lot of it, and we're going to post this on our Facebook page. It's an article by Clarice Feldman, and it's called Russia? No. The pony in the manure is the corruption of our intelligence officials. She says there's so much in print and online about the House and Senate intelligence committees and Russia collusion, in quotes, with Trump, that I can't blame people with real lives to lead who just throw their hands up and garden or go hiking. Some will assume there's got to be a pony in there somewhere, as Ronald Reagan used to joke about the kid digging through manure. I think there is, but it isn't that Russia corrupted the 2016 election. It's that Obama and his closest aides, including some at the highest level in the intelligence community, illegally intercepted one or more Republican candidates' communications before the election, circulated them widely to their cohorts, and then tried to use this information to defeat and later to hamstring Trump when Hillary, to their surprise, lost the election. I also suspect that the attacks on Flynn have nothing to do with his Russian contacts, which he disclosed, but rather to misdeeds respecting the Middle East, particularly Iran, the country he observed as Obama's head of the DIA. She goes on to say, we learned this week that surveillance of Trump began long before he was a Republican nominee, and that the names in the intercepted communications were unmasked, that is, identified by name or context by someone high up in the intelligence community. In addition, citizens affiliated with Trump's team who were unmasked were not associated with any intelligence about Russia or other foreign intelligence, sources confirmed. The initial unmasking led to other surveillance, which led to other private citizens being wrongly unmasked, sources say. Unmasking is not unprecedented, but unmasking for political purposes, specifically of Trump transition team members, is highly suspect and questionable, according to an intelligence source. Opposition by some in the intelligence agencies who were very connected to the Obama and Clinton team was strong. After Trump was elected, they decided they were going to ruin his presidency by picking them off one by one. And then she goes on, this again is an article by Clarice Feldman. She goes on to cite Victor Davis Hanson's article, which I started telling you about, where Victor says the central question is who leaked the classified information and for what purpose. And he asked the question, since when is it improper or even unwise for an apprehensive intelligence official to bring information of some importance to the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee for external review in a climate of endemic distrust of intelligence agencies? Nunes also said that the surveillance shown to him was essentially a lot of information on the president-elect and his transition team and what they were doing. Further, he suggested that the surveillance may have involved high-level Obama officials. When a reporter at Nunes' second March 22nd press conference asked, can you rule out the possibility that senior administration officials were involved in this? Nunes replied, no, we cannot. And so he says, what I've been saying to you, if true, it's historical in proportion. of an anti-constitutional magnitude comparable to Watergate. Given the stakes, we should expect hysteria to follow, and it has followed. He goes on, he talks about Elizabeth Farkas, who we just played that clip of her admitting that they had all this information and the Trump team would be upset if they knew how they got it and how they disseminated it. Yeah, they would, because it's illegal, and it had nothing to do with Russia. And so here's in regard to James Comey. This is what Victor Davis Hanson had to say. There is no need to rehash the strange political career of FBI Director James Comey during the 2016 elections. Comey himself was quick to note that his agency is investigating supposed collusion between Team Trump and Russia, but he refused to comment on whether or not the FBI is investigating possibly inappropriate or illegal intercepts of Trump officials and the surely illegal dissemination of intercepted info through leaks to favorable media. The FBI was concerned that the ill-secured, this is amazing, I'm going to run out of time here. Again, we're going to post this article. This is a long article, and it's got stuff in it that I did not know, some things I had an inkling of, but this is really thick with information. The FBI was concerned that the ill-secured DNC internet communications were being hacked and sought to examine them. The DNC refused and engaged an outfit called CrowdStrike to do the job. CrowdStrike reported that Russia had likely tapped their server. CrowdStrike, not the FBI. The FBI allowed the DNC to keep their stuff personal. They did not go into their email because the DNC didn't want them to. This is an investigation. So the DNC hires this independent group called CrowdStrike, and it's CrowdStrike who says the Russians were connected. There's no explanation of why CrowdStrike was chosen, why the FBI allowed this, and why it apparently relied on that outfit's findings. Recently, CrowdStrike has walked back many of its claims after a Voice of America report that the company misrepresented data published by an influential British think tank. And then there's the dossier compiled by the former British intelligence agent Christopher Steele. If you recall, this dossier was commissioned through a D.C. firm. Now listen, this is the one that I read to you about Trump supposedly sharing a bed, you know, having prostitutes in this bed to defile the bed of Barack Obama and Michelle. Just a bizarre dossier. And that was immediately reported by people that knew anything. It was a ridiculous report with just the claims were just outrageous. This was written by Christopher Steele, the former British intelligence agent. If you recall, this dossier was commissioned through a D.C. firm, Fusion GPS, by Hillary to dig up opposition research on her opponents. And when she dropped it, unnamed Republicans followed up on the contract. At some point, dog in the manger John McCain got it and widely distributed it to the press and political figures. These Republicans, too, dropped the service, at which time the FBI picked it up. Though they claim they have not paid GPS, and that's Fusion GPS, Comey apparently has based his still ongoing investigation on it. The dossier's utter bunk. Ironically, it is Fusion GPS that is itself tied to Russian intelligence. Oh, I could go on and on. Maybe I will tomorrow. I'll pick it up again and read some more of this. And we will put this on our Facebook page so that you can read it. It's, again, written by Clarice Feldman, and I barely scratched the surface. Can you see how intriguing it all is? And not just intriguing, it's dangerous. We live in dangerous times, and it's a serious time. It requires seriousness in terms of our faith, our commitment to the Lord, and the way we fight on behalf of our family and our future. And I just ask you to stand up straight and take it on. Don't be afraid. Don't be weary in well-doing. Let's take this thing to the finish wherever it leads. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family